Welcome to Protect, suicide prevention training podcast for healthcare professionals. I'm Manan, consultant psychiatrist, founder, and head of faculty at Progress Guide.
Good day. I'm Mahi, your host for episode 6, Risk Rethink. So far, we have covered two chapters from the core module. The first, Care Compass, focused on the balancing act that professionals need to strike between risk and recovery. The second, Optimized Pain Relief, provided strategies for creating a pain-based narrative. The goal is to discover common ground between the person who is struggling with suicidal distress and the supporting professional. Both theoretical constructs help in creating relational safety by getting the person and their family and friends on board for the recovery journey. On the road ahead, risk to self fluctuates based on what is going on in the person's life. The person, their loved ones, and all professionals involved have a part to play in addressing and responding to the risk. For the professional, it begins with a risk assessment. Manan, given in this episode, we will be focusing on a novel approach to risk. Will you begin by sharing with our listeners the purpose of a risk assessment?
Put simply, the purpose of a risk assessment is to alert the assessor to the presence of warning signs and guide the next steps in risk management.
Are there specific issues that you see in current risk assessment practices?
Risk assessment training has been obsessed with empirically based risk factors, and it is true that risk factors can alert the assessor to the potential for harm. But there are hundreds of them, and in reality, they make little predictive contribution on their own.
But surely detection of risk factors must be central to risk management.
Yes and no. Consider one of the strongest risk factors, the presence of a psychiatric diagnosis. Psychological autopsy studies have consistently shown that 90% of people who take their lives through suicide have a diagnosis of a mental illness. However, in secondary mental health care, every patient has a diagnosis. This makes the presence or absence of the same redundant as a predictive risk factor. The same can be said of most risk factors when considered independently. As for example, of the millions who are socially isolated, very few go on to take their life through suicide.
So, a simple risk factor-driven approach to risk assessment and prediction does not work.
Yes, it will miss the individual context of the person and how a clinically diagnosed condition interacts with the person's context, like social isolation or their personality type, stressful work environment, broken relationship, bereavement, physical pain, disfigurement, legal issues, complex trauma from childhood sexual abuse, to name a few. It is not the risk factor on its own, but the interaction between factors that often tips the person into suicidal distress, precipitating a perfect storm.
Given the dynamic nature of risk and constant fluctuations due to the ebbs and flows of life, surely it is difficult, if not impossible, to predict when, where, and how the perfect storm will be precipitated. What does a professional do in that case?
There is, however, a final common pathway of warning signs which involves the emergence of hopelessness, suicidal thoughts, plans, and actions. These are a proxy measure of how significant the interaction of risk factors is at the moment. Warning signs indicate how close the perfect storm is.
So, your recommendation is?
Focus on warning signs rather than risk factors. All warning signs are risk factors, but not vice versa, the key difference being time. Warning signs are dynamic, temporary, and capture an acute escalation of risk rather than static suicide risk in the longer term.
But warning signs can only predict clear and imminent risk. What about longer term risk?
I would strongly recommend focusing on determining clear and imminent risk rather than providing a generic risk opinion about longer-term risk. It is the next few minutes, hours, and days that one can meaningfully intervene in, not years. There are too many variables that can change in a short period of time following a suicidal presentation. Any attempt to provide a risk opinion beyond a time frame that one can safely plan for is invalid and redundant.
Are you saying that risk factors have no value at all?
No, I'm not saying that risk factors have not got any value. Successfully treating a person's diagnosed mental illness and or substance misuse would help them embrace new and alternative ways of coping with the challenges of life, thus effectively reducing the risk. If untreated, it compounds the hopelessness and entrapment one perceives.
So the same can be said of other modifiable risk factors, like reconnecting with family and friends to overcome social isolation.
Yes, although risk factors on their own add little over and above what warning signs can provide in terms of risk prediction, they do provide valuable opportunities for intervention and risk mitigation.
In terms of rethinking risk, prioritizing warning signs over risk factors, is that the primary message of the third chapter in the core module?
Well, it is a message. I will not say the message. The primary goal of this chapter is to steer professionals away from traditional categorical predictions of high, medium, and low risk towards a continuum of risk. Risk categorization is an incredibly static approach to something that is fundamentally dynamic.
Can you tell us more about the continuum of risk?
Let me introduce our listeners to Schneidman. In the previous episode, I had mentioned his name as the person who coined the term psychic. He's often regarded as the father of modern suicidology and is renowned for proposing the cubic model of suicide. The elegant simplicity of this model, designed to conceptualize and predict situational specificity of an upcoming suicidal act, is difficult to beat. It gets us thinking of suicide risk assessment in three dimensions: psychic or psychological pain, stress or overwhelming life stress, and perturbation or agitation. Imagine a cube. A cube has three axes, and each of the dimensions are plotted on each axis. Each dimension is a five-point continuum. So at one end of the cube, you have 0, 0, 0, so the lowest point on the risk continuum. And at the diametrically opposite end, you have 5, 5, 5, the highest point. And in between, you have all the different permutations and combinations. The coming together of all three psychological forces, psychic, stress, and perturbation, in the 5, 5, 5 corner cubelet indicates a clear and imminent risk of a suicidal act.
I would request our listeners to look at the images available at www.progress.guide/blog and navigate to episode 6. It is much easier to conceptualize if you are looking at the images while listening to the podcast. Let's go through each of these psychological forces. What is psychic?
This is a profound and seemingly unbearable emotional suffering that the suicidal mind is drowning in. The pain is unique to the individual, and so is the pain threshold at which the person will cave and engage in a suicidal act. Comprehending the height of the pain is central to any risk assessment process. As discussed in the previous episode, Optimizing Pain Relief, it is a key factor in risk management. Either the source of the pain has to be identified and chipped away at, or if the pain is inevitable, tolerance has to be raised through coping strategies.
It sounds like the second axis, press from overwhelming life stress, could be at the source of psychic.
That's true. Stress relates to those largely external pressures that have the capacity to psychologically overwhelm an individual. Many cite these as the root of the individual psychic. It may be a relationship breakup, loss of a professional or personal role in life, traumatic events. They all cause significant distress and disrupt something that is deeply meaningful to the person. Sometimes stresses can be internal, as for example, command hallucinations in someone suffering from schizophrenia. stresses give rise to the perception that I am trapped by life and am overpowered by its psychological demands.
And finally, what is perturbation?
The survival instinct is significantly stronger than the drive for pain relief through suicide. This life-preserving force often explains why there are many who continue to live on with significant psychic. Perturbation can be thought of as the psychological oomph that is needed to overcome this natural threshold to avoid death. It is a state of emotional upset when one feels compelled to do something to change or alter his or her current unbearable situation. Although not synonymous, the term agitation captures this psychological energy that ranges from inner disquiet to overt psychomotor agitation.
So, these three axes are all plotted on a scale of 0 to 5 on the cubic model, tracking up with increasing severity of each of these psychological forces.
Yes, and Schneidman postulates that suicidal acts occur in the lethal 5-5-5 intersection when the interaction of the maximum levels of psychological pain, stress, and agitation compel an individual to attempt to break free from the entrapment of life. So the 5-5-5 corner cubelet can be taken as an operational definition of clear and imminent danger to self.
I can see what you mean by a dimensional approach and how risk is a continuum spread across the 125 cubelets within the larger cube. I can also see how changes for better or for worse can move the risk from one cubelet to another. This continuum is in a sharp contrast to the risk categories of high, medium, and low. But how would you use it in everyday clinical practice?
The model not only informs the assessment of suicide risk in terms of whether the risk is clear and or imminent, but it can be used to formulate and target clinical interventions. Moving the person from the 5-5-5 corner on any of the three axes can meaningfully move a high-risk suicidal patient into a less dangerous psychological space.
Can you share some examples?
So let's say the husband receiving news of a promising new research trial for his terminally ill wife. This might move the husband from the 5-5-5 corner cubelet to a 5-5-4 as it decreases the intensity of his psychological pain. Another example could be that you, as the professional, organize for a PhD student a reprieve for 3 months to submit their thesis, and it was the thesis submission which was making the student completely overwhelmed. So again, you have moved the PhD student from the corner cubelet of 5-5-5 to a 4-5-5, decreasing the level of press or overwhelming life stress in the student's life at the moment. Another example could be providing lorazepam to a person pacing all night with extremely high levels of psychomotor agitation, moving them from a 5-5-5 to 5-4-5, decreasing their perturbation and the compulsion to act.
Each of these seemingly minor actions can move a person just enough on the relevant axis that might allow for other interventions and treatments to take effect.
Yes, the cubic model provides a three-dimensional assessment window into the suicidal mind that eclipses any one-dimensional linear way of thinking about suicide risk assessment in terms of risk factors. Furthermore, each continuum serves as a target for multimodal biopsychosocial interventions. Compared to the categorical classification of high, medium, and low, a continuum from a risk management perspective is significantly more empowering for professionals. Each small nudge contributes to safety in the moment.
The key message today is focus on warning signs rather than risk factors. And when thinking about risk, think of it as a continuum. In the next episode, we will continue the discussion on risk and explore the futility of risk categorization in detail. We will provide an alternative way to describe risk that takes into account the spectrum of risk and daily dynamic fluctuations. We will also look at the three mindset shifts that that are essential to this new approach to risk and safety. As usual, please do follow the podcast. There'll be weekly episodes every Friday, and share it with your colleagues. Providing healthcare professionals contemporary knowledge about risk assessments is crucial in suicide prevention. You can be a vector for spreading this knowledge at your work. Thank you for joining us.